Welcome to Green Legion Radio's Ice to Shorts Winter Sports, brought to you by Bud Light. This is Philly Mike Diaz, Shut Up Diaz, and we are happy to be bringing the show to you live tonight on Facebook Live, our YouTube, and Twitter. Please, we start the show every way. Please go ahead and download the iHeartRadio app or iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, Google Play. Download, subscribe, rate, review, all that good jazz. My sidekick here, my partner in crime, Chris Sackmaster Reggie, is still under the weather. He's going to be activated to the active roster tomorrow. So I thought with perfect time for a special guest. We've got Matt Milne on the Philly Voice. But before I introduce you, Matt, just a couple small businesses we'd like to honor here. Our friends at Stateside Vodka, featuring their new bourbon. They will deliver anywhere in the Philadelphia region. Ken Davies at all City Fitness locations. Cavs Rittenhouse in University City, where I used to go when I was at Drexel. Our friends at Chickies and Pete's South Philadelphia and all Chickies and Pete's locations. Dining indoors is now available. Next Sip, the safest way to drink hands-free. Our friends JP over at Bucks County Baseball Company, online and in-store, all authentic memorabilia and collectibles. And, of course, the lovely ladies of Delilah's, reopening Monday, January 25th. So getting that out of the way, I'd like to welcome my good buddy, Matt Mullen from the Philly Voice. Matt, how are you this evening?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. How are you?
That's great. I'm doing good. I'm happy you're here. There's been a lot in the news, in the Philly sports news. I thought, why not bring someone in who's kind of connected to all of that, the story behind the story. But I wanted to ask you, too, and this is stupid. You're obviously a Philly guy now. Mm-hmm. You've been in the area your whole life. I'm not sure where you grew up and all that.
Yeah, I grew up in Northeast Philly, left to go to Miami for 4 years.
Nice.
Came back. So except for that 4 years in Miami, been here my whole life.
How did you go to Miami and come back?
It was extremely difficult, but I graduated college in 2009 and no one was hiring in 2009. So right, I came home, worked for my dad for a little bit before starting my journalism career.
Well, we're happy to have you. You do some great work.
And thank you.
We'll touch on that in a little bit. But even like you said, 2009, no one was hiring and you came up here. There's been a lot of change within the Philly sports media atmosphere, environment the last couple of years. We're seeing a lot of changes. Some of the tried and true staples that we were used to. We're seeing some jobs splinter up and people going on their own thing, like this show of ourselves here with the mm-hmm. Green Legion Radio and Ice to Shorts Winter Sports. So what's changed since you've been involved the last, how long you've been at Philly Voice? Five years?
Since longer? It launched, we just celebrated our sixth anniversary.
Okay. All right. Well, I was pretty close there.
It's been
a while.
And I was at Philly.com for 5 years before that. So
Right. So in the decade or so that you've been here, mm-hmm. what's different here? What are some of the opportunities that you see and some of the challenges that have come up over the last decade or so?
I think when I first arrived back in Philly, there was still kind of a hesitance towards digital. I mean, it was still the print paper, the broadcast stations kind of drove everything, and digital was just kind of taking off. And obviously, you know, in that 10 years, we've gone from a handful, 10 maybe outlets to now, I mean, just look at all the different people that are down covering the Sixers, covering the Flyers, covering the Eagles, covering the Phillies. There's a much wider group of people covering it, which I think is great because the more perspectives you get, the better. But I've also noticed that the teams have been better at embracing those people. Before, if you had a blog or a website or something, you were a nobody to them. Unless you had a big name behind you. And now, you know, some teams more than others, but they're starting to realize, okay, these are the people that our fans are reading or our fans are listening to or following. And I think that they've, you know, realized that just because you don't work at an Inquirer or a Daily News or an NBC Sports Philly or one of those big places doesn't mean that you aren't credible, don't know what you're doing. Like, sure, there are people who don't, but I think for the most part, people do know what they're doing, and the teams are getting better about letting those people have access.
Yeah, and you guys got a great lineup of writers over there at Philly Voice. From yourself, of course. That's why we got you here on the show. But I'm primarily following Eagles and Sixers, so Kemsky and Kyle Newbeck, probably my favorite Sixers writer, if not some.
I'm biased, but I think Kyle's one of the best writers in the city.
Yeah, he's fair and balanced. He rips them when they need to be ripped, but mm-hmm. also we tend to get a little bit exaggerated or emotional mm-hmm. as fans here in town. Mm-hmm. I think he kind of levels it out and be like, hey guys, whether we're talking about the stories we always have to talk about, Embiid's conditioning and Simmons shooting and Brett Brown's coaching and Brett Brown's rotations and stuff like that. I think he's pretty fair with that. But I think that's a good point too. A decade ago, even there's still some holdovers where mm-hmm. if it's not the old black and white print and it's a blog. I think what some people don't realize is that everything is a blog style now. News mm-hmm. is reported. Sometimes like you guys have some long features that you'll be putting weeks and hours in, but most of the time there's news that pops up, it's up there right away. And yep. and the people that you got covering it, they comment right away. That's what a blog is. It's not necessarily like what everyone used to think, people right. stuck in a basement, writing without right. any kind of resources. It's great that the teams have been a little more open in mm-hmm. sharing that space because the more voices you got, the better. I tend to find with a couple of exceptions, the traditional or the old school print newspapers, the writers there, it's almost like they're trying to feed the beast of these angry sports fans. And I never really learn. It's either like, some writers that just write like, this guy scored this many points and had this many rebounds and this batter went 0-for-4 or whatever. Mm-hmm. Or it's like they're just trying to, get the clicks, which is fair. That's what they're yeah. there to do. But, I think it's great that they're doing it. Let me ask you this. How do you... I run the social media for Green Legion and we've got, tens of thousands of followers and it picks up more during football season, but most of the time, any kind of reaction that we get on social media or any kind of, it's all positive. People enjoy the trips that we run. They enjoy the parties. They enjoy meeting fans from all over the world. But then, there's always people that have something to say, some comment where, they had to wait, the beer was out and they had to wait 5 minutes to get a new beer right. or something like that. How do you, some of the things that you guys report on, which we'll touch in a little bit, you're either crushing an athlete that fans might feel extra connected to, or talking about things that people don't want to hear. How do you guys handle some of the backlash and some of Twitter, it's the worst place in the world. How do you personally, and how does the team kind of approach that? Because I get one bad review out of 50 and I'm devastated for the rest of the day.
Yeah, I think we all have our own different ways of handling it. I think Jimmy handles it with humor and will be dismissive of people, but in a funny way, try to cut through some of whatever nastiness is there. Sometimes we'll give it right back to people. Kyle, the same way. I more go with the ignore it route. I think sometimes acknowledging these, trolls or whatever you want to call them, is just giving them what they want. Sometimes someone will say something nasty about me and I'll just like the comment and that'll be it. Because then they'll be like confused. Wait, why did he like this comment? If it's actual criticism, I'm fine with that. If it's like legit, I disagree with your point, here's why I disagree with it, then I'll have a back and forth with someone. But I won't give someone who just says, you're a bleep or whatever. I'm just not going to give them the time of day. I don't read the comments below the stories. I learned at Philly.com a long time ago that you're not going to get anything out of there. There might be one, like you said, you have all these people saying positive things and one negative, the comment section at the bottom of the story is almost always negative with one or two comments in there. And I mean, I've been called terrible things.
I may or may not have shown up in those comments, but I always try and do lighthearted. I don't, you know, go after
it's not personally or family,
you know, not, be like, yeah, what's this? Yeah.
Well, it's always the same group of people, I feel right. like. And, you know, some of those people may be the same people on Twitter that are giving me a hard time. But, you know, I typically try as much as I can, and I'm sure we'll talk about past stories that we've written that the reaction has spilled over from just online comments to worse stuff. And that's the only time it really gets scary. You know, people threaten you or post your address or something like that. Luckily that's never happened to me, but it has happened to people I work with. So, you know, I tend to try to ignore them. I think that's the best thing you can do. And I'm sorry if you're listening and you're one of those people who have said nasty stuff and I've ignored you. I would never, I'm the same way. Like those things, like, I probably shouldn't say this, but like, yeah, they hurt. I don't like getting those negative comments, but then I just think this person, how happy can they be in their own life if like they get joy out of whatever this is? So right. just ignore it. I think that's the only thing you can really do.
Since you've been involved here for a decade and you grew up here and you know you loved all your teams, this is like, oh, I got an opportunity in my home market, and you know you're blessed in that way. Are you still a fan, or is it just, you know, with work and taking times away from, you know, holidays, if you have to edit a story or write something up or something's breaking, like listen, you know where the bodies are buried, I'm sure. There's things that, you know, for what goes public, there's all these, you know, whether it's true or not, or rumors or tips and stuff like that, you can't say. Is it at all possible to remain a fan, or is it just work now?
So if I could show you the bookshelf that's right behind my computer, it's all full of, you know, Sixers and Phillies and all kinds of memorabilia and stuff. But I think I'm less of a fan on like a game to game basis. Obviously, if like, you know, when the Eagles were going to the Super Bowl, like, yeah, there was a part of me that was like, oh my God, like they're going to win the Super Bowl. But my wife will tell you, I was sitting on the couch next to her. She was bawling her eyes out like a kid. And she's like, and you were just stone faced, like no emotional reaction at all.
Is that because you had to rush down a Broad Street real quick and take like fan reactions or something?
No, I couldn't even do that. I was editing Jimmy's story, writing my own story. Like we had a ton of stuff going on, but it was, more, I think part of that rubs off from covering games live. Like you can't, there's no cheering in the press box, you know, you have to keep it cool. But I think it definitely takes the fan enjoyment out of it. But at the same time, I mean, I love what I do. So if that's the trade-off that I, you know, Sundays, I don't get to go hang out with my friends and watch the Eagles and cheer them on, but I, you know, I either get to be down at the game or I'm getting paid to watch the game and write about it.
Right. Not bad.
It's hard for me to complain about that. Yeah.
Right. I gotcha. Before we move on to some actual Philly sports topics, I sent this out to you earlier and I was wondering if you would have an answer. What's one thing from the media side? There's a whole war on media and good media and bad media and fake news and this and that. And, you know, and listen, you're a reasonable person. I think you're honest in your writing. What's one thing that you wish or you would like fans to know that they might not realize or just fully understand from the media side and how you guys either report or commentary opinion? What's one thing you think that fans would find beneficial or they could take away from something that maybe would change their perspective on how things work around here?
I think the most important thing to realize is the vast majority of us went to school for this and like know what we're doing. So we're not just throwing stuff out there, you know, not making stuff up. Like, sure, there are some times when stuff like that could happen. But people tend to think that when a reporter gets something wrong, that they were making it up, not that you know, things might have been looking one way when they reported it, and then something changed and it doesn't wind up that way. So I think there's that, and that kind of ties in with people always think that the media is out to get their favorite team, which I can tell you is not true. Like, from a media perspective, our jobs are easier, better, more fun, more secure when the teams are winning. Like, that's just not a question. 2017 was the best year I've ever had covering the Eagles. Like, that was awesome. Why would I want another year, or why would I want a year like this year? You know, we're not just going to make stuff up just to, you know, like, I feel like I'm Rick James in Charlie Murphy's True Hollywood Story. Like, I'm not just going to make something up just to make it up. Like, it doesn't work like that.
How do you make a determination whether it's newsworthy? You know, like you said, if things are better, and things are better because it's just a more positive environment, everyone's in a good mood, teams are winning, you know, you guys are whatever your eyeballs reached, you know, mm-hmm. your quotas or numbers are up. If there's something that comes across that might be, I don't even want to say salacious, but something that might not be, you know, entirely positive, you know, these locker rooms, especially football, man, there's what, 70 guys in a room. Not everyone loves each other. You know, there's people that probably don't even interact at all. And then, you know, like what we're seeing right now, things start leaking out when things are bad. But when you hear things that are going well, like, how do you decide, we don't need to rock the boat here on this one? Who makes that decision for you guys?
Well, I think it depends. I mean, if you're talking about writing up some other report that's already out there, if it's from a credible source and it's something that seems important that could, you know, impact the team, or really we work for the fans. Like, we're supposed to be the conduit. So if there's information that we think is important or that they need to know that could color the way they view the team, we're going to want to pass that information along. If we're hearing something, you know, from a team, you know, I think where we're going to lead into with this conversation, I think I know what story you might be talking about, but if it's something that we're hearing from credible sources, specifically multiple people, and it's something that we think fans need to know about, then yeah, we will make sure to pass that along. But I think there are lots of conversations that happen along the way to decide, especially if it's something big. It's not just something that we're going to say, okay, let's do this. There's a lot of conversations.
So you got me there. That's leading into one of the main things here I wanted to talk to you about today. Over the weekend, a column came out by Jeff McClain of the Philadelphia Inquirer. It looks to be, it's all anonymous, but heavily sourced. It seems like it wasn't just a write-up that he did in one day. A lot of background on Carson Wentz within the locker room, within the coaching staff, within just general NovaCare Center. Some opinions on his play and attitude from other players and staff members. A lot of different, all anonymous sources. A lot of different people. And as I'm reading this, because I am a fan of Philly Voice and the writers you got over there, I'm thinking, you know, it's not word for word, but a lot of the themes that were running in there and a lot of the behavior, this was reported a couple years back with, let me see if you tell me if I got this right, Joe Santoliquido.
Yep.
All right. I nailed it.
Nailed it.
From Joe's column a couple years back where, oh my gosh. I mean, I remember the blow up over it. And I think, you correct me if I'm wrong, Joe, you know, Joe had talked about that Carson Wentz was, maybe had too much power in within the team or in the structure and was kind of going over people's heads and was standoffish and wasn't a leader, by, you know, quotes from four or five anonymous players. And I was thinking, you know what, there's 70 guys in there. You know, if it's Lane Johnson, Jason Peters, Zach Ertz, and, Alshon Jeffrey and Jason Kelsey, we got a problem there. I don't know who these players are. It could be the Donnell Pumphreys of the world. I don't really know who they were, but I said, okay, well, that's something to keep in mind here. It doesn't mean, you know, guys, the guy came in, he was given everything. And, you know, it doesn't mean he's done and he's not going to be able to survive here. But then with McLean's article, it was received a lot differently. So, you know, I did read Joe's follow-up a year later, 8 months, whenever he was following up, kind of talking about, I think you might have talked about this too, the kind of reporting and the kind of work that went behind the scenes before you laid it out and you know, fact-checking as much as you can here. So why do you think it's just because the losing or because Wentz played so bad at the beginning of this year, he was benched, the contract.
Are you saying why it was received differently?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, this latest story had a lot more examples or, you know, like this happened on, you know, Wentz was benched, Wentz went over Doug's head straight to Howie Roseman and the owner. Like, that's a specific example where Joe's was more a lot more about, like, Wentz's presence in the locker room and the way he treated other people. So there wasn't like, well, this one time he told me to go, you know, screw myself or anything like that. But say, what do you think that Joe's story?
I think there was, so I think in Joe's, and I get some of the reaction we got was that the way it was written, there were certain phrases and stuff in there that people said made it seem like Joe had some sort of anti-Carson Wentz agenda.
Well, to be fair, at the beginning of the year, maybe because he was starting hearing some grumbling, wasn't he kind of, he had started the year off on Twitter or something with some one like innocuous tweet about Wentz or something like that. I forget exactly.
But he wrote something for CBS that was, you know, negative about, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't that he hated Carson Wentz. And in fact, that story didn't even start as a Carson Wentz story. It started as a Mike Groh story. And we were writing, you know, what is wrong with the offense? And that was really the only thing that we could figure was Reich is gone and the new guy is struggling with the offense or whatever. And as Joe was reporting that story out, he kept hearing from, you know, people over and over again, no, it's not Groh, it's 11. So that kind of shifted that whole story. And then he reported that out. And that was kind of how, and I mean, we worked on that. When did he first approach me about that? October, November? And we didn't publish it until January.
Yeah, it was after the season, right? The
season was over, 2 years ago today. I'm pretty sure that we published
that. Whoa!
Yeah.
That was not planned. That was not planned. That's pretty funny, though.
So yeah, and I think some of that reaction had to do with some of that, but like you said, it was the first one to really paint that picture. It was, you know, coming off of a good year. People didn't want to believe it, and I think since there have been not just McLean's report, but there have been other things coming out. You know, there's the Jacina Anderson stuff, and there have been other mentions about Carson getting in. Not confrontations, but, you know, not gelling as well as you would like in the locker room. Joe's story did have a couple specific examples. I mean, it had one about him getting into a screaming match in the weight room with a veteran player. You know, and there were some other stuff. There's people only see what goes into the story. And a lot of times the stuff we use to confirm the story or to give a full picture, we can't put all of that stuff in there because if it's in there, then the source has given up. There might've only been two or three people in the room when something happened. And if we write, we know this happened, then the Eagles and Carson are going to know, well, this is one of the people who talked.
Right. Or if it was like, for example, there's an offensive starter that filled in, you know, the middle of the season and was replaced. Then you could be like, all right, who was this? You go down your roster and, it was Big V over there. Now Big V, you know, so I got you like identified real quick. Cause I want to get your opinion on what the Eagles can do now here, but, with these anonymous sources, what I find, and you know, we're having a rough month here in January, with our country, but a lot of this, you know, is around people just, you know, this, because you don't like a story doesn't mean it's true. And I'm not talking politics because there are people that are Democrats that will believe anything that's written bad about Trump is true. And then there's people that like Trump who think everything that was written about Trump is false. And that's not necessarily the case on either way. Yep. And, you know, you take the information, you take it as it was. But it's funny that some people that will believe everything that it's almost a confirmation bias. Oh, I believe my opinion on X player, Carson Wentz, Joel Embiid.
Confirmation. Yep.
Yeah. And like, if you write something bad about Joel Embiid, you're just a hater. You're not appreciating his greatness, where they're, you know, he's certainly open for criticism. And I think that's the same thing with Wentz. But let's talk actually about moving forward here. Some of these things, you know, everyone has their priorities of Howie, Doug, and Wentz, what happened, what went wrong this past season. My personal rankings were Howie, Wentz, Doug.
Same.
And I think what a lot of this going on, especially what we heard about Doug and them kind of like, you know, kicking him on his way out the door of releasing his listing of coaches and stuff like that. Like, I mean, Doug had, you know, this, what is it? Emotional intelligence, whatever. It just seems like he was easily pushed around. He was pushed around from below with Wentz, and he was pushed around on top with Howie and by, you know, or Lori by proxy of Howie. And, you know, it seems like even this year, like, oh, we were blaming the play calling, but it's like every time, you know, there's no fans. I heard kill every other play, and I'm like, man, it, like, Wentz is killing a lot of plays here. I don't know the play call. I'm not that advanced right to pick it up. I'm not, you know, an ex player, but like, how the way that Doug left, first off, how can anyone come in here? But like, how can Wentz stay here after all of this? Like, he seems that in certain circumstances he's uncoachable. He'll call the plays he wants to call for. You know, the big thing the last few days, he feels like all these people work for him. He's not a part of the group. It's kind of Wentz on top and everyone down. Like, how do they get out of this? You know, you can't trade him. What happens?
No. And everything they've been saying seems to be that, you know, we think, you know, we can fix him or that he's fixable. Well, that doesn't mean that they're going to be the team to fix him. You know, they could be saying that in an effort to try to trade him, which, so my big thing is the Eagles screwed themselves because Jalen Hurts, I don't think is good enough to be the guy, right? Like, I don't think he's good. I don't think he's a top 10 quarterback, let's say. I think he can be good enough that if you could put a team around him, you know, stud wide receivers, a great offensive line, a really good defense, he's good enough to win. They can't do that, though, because even if they trade Carson Wentz, they still have to deal with his cap hit, at least this year, and possibly next year, depending on when they would trade him. So you lose, like, there's basically two ways to win in the NFL. You either have a young quarterback on a rookie contract and a loaded roster around him, or you have Aaron Rodgers, Pat Mahomes, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, you have someone like that. The Eagles have the former, I think, in Jalen Hurts, but they can't build around him because they're strapped with 11's contract. So I think that's really tough for any coach coming in from the, like, this is a roundabout way to answer your question, but if you're coming in from the outside looking at taking this on, you're right. What do you see in this team that you think is, okay, this is going to be the team I want to take over where I think I can be successful? Because the guy before you just won a Super Bowl and got fired 3 years later, which is, you know, really, except for one rare circumstance where it was a beef between the owner and the coach, that's never happened before. So
yeah, it's you know, the president of Captain William Demps defending our country down there in Maryland. He is the president of Diaz Nation, and I saw a post of him, a post that he had done over there, and it was listing of just, like, you know, people like John Gruden and, you know, all, you know, these guys stayed for 5 years. This guy stayed for 8 years. Brian Billick won a Super Bowl, stuck around. And you're like, yeah, that is true. You know, like, even if you hate, like, he won a Super Bowl. How are you going to get better than that? He won a Super Bowl with six Nick starters Cole out. You know what I mean? It's insane. Here's a question from Super Sam, our intern Samantha Ross, who may have a comment here for you. Is there any coach that walks in the door next year that's going to be able to have a say in anything? I mean, from player personnel to who's the quarterback, are we worried at all that they're not moving forward with hiring a coach because the people they're interviewing are like, I want to pick. It seems to me that Hallie and Lori are like, here are the coaches that we want you to hire. Here's the quarterback we want you to play. And is the new coach going to have any juice at all in the building?
Right. And that's, I mean, you got to look, wasn't that kind of the thing with last year, hiring an offensive coordinator was like, well, they're not going to, who are they going to bring in because Doug wants to call the plays? I mean, this is kind of the same thing, just a level up where it's the right. GM and the coach. And you're right. Like, who is going to want to come in if they're telling you, you have to fix Wentz and, you know, you have to keep Deuce, you have to keep this guy, you have to keep this guy, which I think they should keep Deuce, but that's besides the point. If you're a coach coming in, you're going to want to pick your offensive and defensive coordinators. It seems that they're acting like this. I think the reason this coaching search is taking so long is in part because I don't think 2 weeks ago or whenever it was, a week and a half ago, I don't think they thought that they'd be hiring a new coach. You know, it's why they didn't start their coaching search until a week after the season ended. It's why they have cast such a wide net. And now they're one of two teams left. So there's no rush for them to hire anyone at this point. So do all the interviews you want, but why is it taking so many interviews? You would think that they would have identified, you know, these are the five guys we want. These are the, you know, whatever it is. Now they're up to 15 guys that they've been linked to. That's something's going on.
Here's a question, and Captain William Demps has posed it. I'm going to adjust it a little bit. Is it possible? His question is it possible to replace all three positions and be successful? Head coach, offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator. And, you know, we saw that with when Doug came in, you know, he won the Super Bowl in the second year, but I'm going to just with this quarterback situation. And I think it's a, you know, I think people will get in line once they want to have a job there. You know, they want to play professional football, but with this cap situation, replacing all these new coaches without any, who's the young guy that they're going to build around here? Dallas Goedert, I guess. Jalen Reagor, the jury's still out. It doesn't look as promising as we had hoped, but, you know, it was just one year. It's okay. It was a terrible year for everybody. Is it possible? When can we?
Is it going to be the number six pick? Is that who they're going to build around? Like, they don't really have a lot on the roster that's really, you know, enticing you. They don't have this young core that, you know, in 2 or 3 years you can look at and they're going to be, you know, this is our future. Unless Wentz is fixable. If he's fixable and can return, not even to 2017 Wentz, but if he can be 2018, 2019 Wentz, you know, if that's a top 10, 9, 8, 9, 10 quarterback in the NFL, okay, that's something you can work with that. But what gives you any assurance that he's going to be able to return to that guy again?
Well, let's, how about this? Here's this thing that I, you know, worried about.
To answer Will's question. It's very tough to do that when, like you said, the roster isn't great. You have no salary cap flexibility because what if the guy you think is going to be the best defensive coordinator runs a 3-4?
Yeah. Right.
You can't hire him.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, we're not hiring any. I don't want anyone with 3-4. Famously, a good buddy of mine, Dan, 5 years ago, before Doug got hired, I remember we were all getting together, and I had him, and he said, I remember who do we want as a coach and all that? We're going around, and he said, I just want two things. I want huddles, and I want a 4-3. That's all that he wanted, because remember, there was no huddling under Chip Kelly. We never did any huddles, so I thought that was pretty funny. But here's, let's just say they can fix Wentz. Like, his on-field, his mechanics, his vision, his decision. But, like, if they fix Wentz, can they fix the locker room?
I was just going to say that, because fixing him physically is one thing. Fixing him mentally is because that's what really surprised me about Jeff's report, because, you know, we had our story 2 years ago, And then Joe wrote one at the beginning of this season where he talked to some people in the locker room, even some of the same people that he talked to before. And they were like, you know, he's been a little better. He's been more open to us in the locker room. He hasn't been as standoffish. He hasn't been as clicky, all that kind of stuff. And then it seems like, you know, once they ran into trouble again, he just reverted back to what he was before.
There was some comments too that I don't think that was in yours way back, but it's all related, mm-hmm. but just how he wouldn't accept that. He doesn't accept responsibility, which, oh my God, remember Donovan McNabb. We didn't even have Twitter back then. God, you know, God bless Donovan McNabb. He's greatest quarterback in Eagles. In the modern Eagles era. I don't want to go back to the 40s. I don't 40s and 60s, but oh my God, he would be getting killed because, you know, Donovan had a similar issue of accepting responsibility. You know, you're the quarterback. It stinks. It's like the head coach. You win. It's the team. You lose. It's your fault. But that's what comes with those $34 million a year deals. But I want him to be better. He was my favorite player. I think Lane Johnson is probably my favorite player on the team now. But you know, I just don't see. Or should I just not even be worried about the locker room? Because most of these players aren't contributors on a playoff team anyway, at least the young guys. The older guys are kind of on their way out.
Right.
We'll see. But, man, it's just a mess there. And then what do you do with Hurts? What do you do?
Like, I feel bad for the guy. Like, he didn't do anything wrong. They drafted him in the second round and brought him in, and it seems like that was like a grenade that they dropped in the locker room. I think the locker room, but I think it can be fixed. But like you said, does it matter? Because these guys aren't really the core. Sure, there are some guys there that could be like Goddard could be a key piece on a Super Bowl team. And even some of the older guys who were there for the first Super Bowl. But the problem is, in order to fix their cap, they're going to need to get rid of, like, a lot of these older guys are probably going to be gone.
Right.
And you know, if you listen to Lori at his, you know, at the Doug presser or whatever, and even Howie and Doug the week before, but it was, I think 90% of the questions were to Howie because he never speaks. So when you get the GM, all the questions are going to be to him, but they seem to be, you know, okay, this is the year we're going to get younger. This is going to be the year we're going to get younger, because last year, that's what they told us. And then he said, because of the pandemic, it threw a wrench in their plans, and they figured with the limited offseason, it would be better to have veterans in here. So they didn't go through the roster turnover that they wanted to.
Blah, 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 blah. Hey, yeah. This goes in. Sorry to interrupt you there, Matt, but I don't know. The writers don't write the headlines to your stories normally, right? Or they do?
No, we do. Like,
okay,
me or Evan, the
Evan
other
Macy,
editor.
Yeah.
Sometimes we'll change them to make them more reader friendly or better or whatever, stronger. But no, a lot of times we write our own.
I think it's probably Kemsky, but it was like the top ten things Jeffrey Lurie said at his delusional press conference. Yeah.
Well, I'll take credit for that because I added the word delusional.
Okay. It wasn't. You're just like, what planet are you on here? We've got some comments coming in. Mike, is it possible Wentz is doing too much to show that he's capable? He just needs the Eagles to back him because he's injured. But I think that's Mike, I respect your question. I think that is a bunch of baloney here. You're a pro quarterback. You know, you don't need these guys are oozing with confidence. A lot of this is overconfidence.
Part of the problem with Wentz is, like,
he doesn't
like
know what he needs.
Well, that, but I think his whole life he's been getting too much support, right? Like, he was the best player growing up. He was the best player in high school, best player in college.
Second round pick. We gave up everything.
And,
yeah.
And was probably told all along the way that he was the greatest, that he was the greatest, that he was the greatest, which, you know, I'm not blaming him for this specifically. That's just the way it was. And now he's running into some real obstacles and is struggling with them, which is why I was hoping after the first story came out and stuff that he would address some of those things and do better. But it's weird because he has the physical skills. Even post knee surgery, like, he doesn't run like he did in 2000. Like, I recently saw a clip of him, that spin move he pulled on the Bears. Like,
yeah,
he doesn't really do that much anymore.
No.
And he tries to a lot. He tries to do those spin moves and the duck under guys stuff that was working in 2017, and it's just not there anymore. But aside from that, we saw in 18 and 19 that he still has the physical skills. It just seems like it's all here. It's all up in his head. And the scary thing is for a young guy, that's the harder part to fix. Like, he's young enough that you could theoretically fix him physically. It's the head, and it doesn't seem like anyone's been able to get through to him so far.
Another question here from the commenters, and I'd like you to put your sports writer or sports media hat on as well. You know, the comment is, why hasn't Wentz said anything? He could have come out and, you know, squashed a lot of these or had a comment. And my personal opinion on one of the reasons I like Philly Voice and your Eagles and Sixers writers is that they don't really rely on quotes. And I feel that a lot of old media and even like, oh, we need the quotes. We need the quotes, the press conference. And for me, I get nothing out of press conferences. Very little, because it's all cliches. And what happens is if you want them to say, they're either too positive, like Kapler, you know, and it's like, well, what do you want? Or it's super negative, and now everyone's talking about how negative this player is, or this, or when Miles Sanders was talking about Jalen Hurts. Oh, we knew he's a competitor. Like, the thing about him is he competes, or whatever he said innocuously to try and say something nice about this particular teammate, not comparing this one to that one. And then, you know, Miles Sanders, he needs to shut up and da da da. And if Wentz came out, I could tell you this is what Wentz would say. I read that there was comments said about me recently that came from my teammates and people in here. Obviously, I'm not doing the things that I need to be a leader in these people's eyes. It's something that I'm working on to be better at. I was at a frustrated year, and if my frustrations boiled over where I wasn't keeping my composure and acting like the true teammate that I wish to be, it's something that I'm going to need to work on, and I'm making a note of that, and it's all in God's hands. And like, that's what he's going to say. That's right. Exactly what he's going to say.
Actually, when our story came out, he didn't come out publicly and say anything. All of his teammates, and I'm just going to say, some of the teammates who came out in support of Wentz didn't have the same things to say in private. But he then held like a mini powwow with obviously.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That
Philly
was
Voice. Philly yeah. Voice was not invited to that.
Right. Right. It was like one writer from ESPN and one from Inquirer, or was it just local people? Just one from,
well, McManus was there. Right, McManus. Yeah. So he's ESPN. Local. He's local. But yeah, they had this little, and he did, that was basically exactly what he said. And he said, you know, some of the things may have been true, and I just need to, you know, grow up and be more mature. And he said the right things in that press conference, but it seems like he didn't go and do it.
We got a good friend and Green Legion Radio's own fan favorite, Hollis Tank Thomas. And listen, Hollis, Hollis is right. I appreciate you coming in to the show here, Hollis. And I wanted to talk to Hollis about this tomorrow, because Hollis has been saying this from day one of this year when things were starting to go bad. He needs to take to his coaching, and he said he wasn't going to change the way he played. Now, I think I'm going to interpolate what Hollis is saying. Not that he's going to, you know, you expect people to say, I'm not going to change the way I play, but it's more like, I'm not going to take to the suggestions that some people are making that could make me better. Saying I'm not going to change, which is like, you know, we equate, I'm not going to change the way I play. I'm always going to give 110% and I'm gritty and hard and I'm going to fight like hell. Well,
he did say some of that after his injury, right? Remember, after he first hurt his knee and stuff, people were saying like, you know, maybe he should stay in the pocket more. Maybe. And he was like, no, I'm not going to change the way I play. And the same thing with, you know, being aggressive down the field or, you know, throwing to guys that maybe weren't that open, but you know, he said he was going to keep taking chances and keep trying to hit the big play and stuff like that. So I took it more as that. But doesn't that kind of go into coaching? Like, if a coach came to him and said, you have to change this a little bit, and he says, no, I'm not changing the way I'm playing, I think it's all kind of the same, different symptoms of the same disease. So
I just don't see how any new coach can come in here and be successful. And by be successful, I mean just make a positive turnaround. I don't think that the Eagles will be any better than 8-8 next year. And listen, if they go 10-6 and I'm the biggest idiot in the world, I'll be happily, you know, I'll say I'm proven wrong, but I don't, they just don't have the talent. They're going to be another year older. Like you said, a lot of the older talented guys that are on their slowing down are going to be gone. And we don't have anyone new to rely on. I see this coach as like a bridge coach, or like, you know, you break up with your girlfriend, you have a rebound person for, you know,
it's like, I think this next coach is Brett Brown.
Oh, well, that was 8 years. I don't think
it's going to last that long, but I think he's going to be the guy who has to be there for the losing years. He's eventually going to get fired after another terrible year. They're going to have a really high draft pick, draft someone good. The next coach is going to come in while they're getting back up on the upswing, I think.
Today is the 19th of January, and you put out your kind of a abbreviated version of who's on the Eagles coaching list here. We were hearing McDaniels, but they continue to interview people. Who do you think ends up being the head coach here, if you had a guess?
I mean, right now, based on everything I've been hearing, and not just like what I've been hearing, but what's been reported and the way things are moving, it feels like McDaniels, right? But then today and yesterday, even, you know, they're interviewing Todd Bowles, they're interviewing the guy from the Colts now, Dennis Allen. Like, more names keep coming out, and it seemed like they were like close to getting it done with McDaniels. And now that all these names are coming out, it's making me second guess and think maybe it's not going to be it. I don't want it to be McDaniels. I don't think he's necessarily the right guy. I think that's the way all the momentum has been going right now. And it's also because no other team interviewed him. The Eagles were the only ones to kind of go after him. I wouldn't mind seeing Deuce, honestly. I mean, I know a lot of people, that seems to be kind of like a semi-fan favorite and stuff, but I would love to see Deuce with a stud offensive coordinator, and a good defensive coordinator, because I think – well, you know, you can say, and I don't know enough about Deuce to know how good he is at schemes and the X's, and I assume he's pretty good at it. But the way the players respond to him, the way he can get these guys to do, basically, you know, just look at what they're saying on Twitter, the way they're, or Instagram, the way people are coming out in support of him. You don't have to be the genius to be the head coach. Like, you could have the coach like Belichick, who is the genius, but you could also go with this guy is just like the leader. He is the guy in charge. Everyone follows him, and the X's and O's can be taken care of by the coordinators.
Yeah. I think it's time to give Deuce a chance and you said earlier too, doubling back, that you know, if Deuce didn't get it, he sticks around. Like, at some point, like, I guess he can't really go anywhere. I mean, he can always resign or something, but that's not good for his career either. But, you know, this would be his fourth. He gets interviewed every year.
This is his fourth time interviewing for the Eagles head coaching job.
Yeah, you're right though. He does. He needs to be capable. He needs to make smart, quick decisions, like in game. But if you can't get an offensive coordinator, it'd be nice to get some new blood in here.
I think that would be the offensive coordinator, and the defensive coordinator would be new blood. And then Deuce already has the
locker room. Yeah,
exactly. So that would be as big of a change for these guys.
I wonder how, you know, because he was here and he saw what's happening, so he have his own ideas of how he needs to approach this. It seems to me, you know, I'm not in there, and I don't have any sources like you or my man Hollis, but it just seems like the locker room is kind of like this Wentz. It kind of hangs over everything, and with the way that this worked out with Doug leaving and then the offensive coordinator Mike Rowe, and Mike Rowe's, you know, I wish him the best. I don't like anyone losing their job, but like, I'm indifferent to him, but it looks like Wentz keeps winning these internal battles here. You know, the new coach that's going to come in, like, is anyone really going to believe that he's got the power when they see how Wentz is kind of operating behind the scenes? But
yeah.
But before we go, we're already at 51 minutes. And I love talking sports and I appreciate your time here, but let's hit some Sixers and some NBA here, because that sure. we are 20% through this, the season here, the 72 game season. Yeah. The Sixers are 9-5. They've won some games that they shouldn't have won. They've lost some games that they shouldn't have lost. They've played some games that they shouldn't have played at all. Just high level, what's your thoughts on this Sixers season so far, year to date, with the team they got, the coaching, and what do you see out of them that you like or don't like?
I think they're definitely moving in the right direction. So we can start there. And I think that's something that, you know, that I like out of the team. I think it's hard not to like Doc Rivers as a person, and as a coach. I think we've seen a re-energized Joel Embiid this year, who is a legit MVP candidate through the first, 20% of the season already?
Yeah. It's 14 games. They 72.
Yeah.
72.
So almost a quarter of the way through the season.
Right.
They'll be a quarter of the way through the season, I guess, by like next week at this rate. And he
well, if they play, like, it, sorry to interrupt, if they play the games, yes.
Yeah. But based on what I was reading today, it seems like they're going to be able to go tomorrow because they had so many guys at practice today. Assuming the Celtics are okay, they should play tomorrow. But anyway, I think they, I think they're a good team. I think they're a legit contender in the East. I don't really know what the deal is with the Nets. I mean, we'll see how they gel once Kyrie's back.
They've looked good so far. I mean,
they
you
have.
Know. Harden's just kind of triple double. What do you have? 31 point triple double his first game. Not bad.
No. And I mean, but you don't know if Kyrie coming back into that locker room shakes up that dynamic. Sometimes you have two guys who are, you know, two all-star, all-world players in Durant and Harden. Three might be too many cooks. But I think the Sixers are. I think they're a good team. I liked Brett Brown. I thought he was a great guy. I was probably one of his bigger defenders, or I was on the side that defended him more than a lot of people because I wanted to.
I felt
bad for what he had gone through, and now it was finally coming to fruition. And like, you know, a couple bounces go a different way against Toronto, and who knows what happens that year, and then that team is torn apart, kind of.
And of course
they had a down year. But if you're gonna, they brought in Doc Rivers, so it was an obvious improvement. There's no denying that. No matter how much you like Brett Brown, and then they brought in Daryl Morey too. On top of that, it's definitely great. A team that seems to be trending in the right direction. If only they could figure out what the hell to do with Ben Simmons,
man. Ben Simmons, just terrible, terrible year. You look at some of these numbers from his rookie year. And like, I mean, he was shooting jump shots, not a lot, maybe two a game, three a game. I mean, I don't care about him shooting. This is what happens whenever you get into Ben Simmons. You start talking about all the positives of a player that he is. And then whoever you're discussing this with is, yeah, but he doesn't shoot, so it doesn't matter. It's like,
But this year I think we're seeing more things than just the shooting.
Right,
that are,
not going to the – yeah, going – is he hurt?
His finger roll flip that he does – I want to throw – like, I didn't play football really growing up. I played baseball. I played basketball more than anything else. So, like, that's probably the sport that game-wise I know more than anything. And that little – dude, you are 6'11", dunk on people. Go like this. Go, you know – overhand dunk on people. You're stronger than a lot of the guys you're going up against. You're either stronger than them or you're faster than them. You're one of the two.
Right.
So it infuriates me when he tries to have soft touch on stuff like that. Like, be violent, be aggressive.
I hear you. It is frustrating, and it's there's little you can say to defend him right now. The way he's looking, it's weird. You know, I compare him to, like, it's hard to compare him. It's just hard. He's a hard player. Like, you know, with people like he doesn't deserve a max contract. You're like, okay. You know, I think sometimes when people say that, they don't understand what a max contract is. There's different levels based on performance. He was a rookie of the year, two-time All-Star, and an All-NBA player. Now, you might argue about the All-NBA thing or whatever, but and he was like, what, third or runner-up in defensive player of the year last year. Yeah. He's a legitimate All-Star, can we say?
He's an All-Star,
but he doesn't shoot. Okay, well, max contract guys, like, there are guys that are not All-Stars, like De'Aaron Fox, who got a max contract same draft year, you know, or 1 year later. Like, so it's kind of like, now, should De'Aaron Fox, like, there's all this. A max contract doesn't mean he right now he's getting paid as the 22nd player in the league. I think that's about where he is with his limitations in half court offense. You know, you add up everything else that he can do, he's gonna win you some games in the regular season. But we're talking about the playoffs here too. We got a question from or a comment from Mike on YouTube that the Sixers still need to prove themselves to be a serious contender in the East. I agree, but like that's true with everything. The Flyers need to prove that they are a serious contender in the East. You know, the Philly.
What does proving it mean? Does that mean winning, beating a couple good teams in the regular season, or getting to the Eastern Conference Finals?
I see it possible.
They do need to prove themselves, absolutely. But I think you prove yourself by contending, right?
Right. Yeah. So
maybe I should say they can be contenders, not that they are contenders.
Yeah, they're in the mix. The East is certainly better this year. And with, you know, one of my questions are, you know, how do they continue the season, the NBA season, as they're going here with these cancellations and these back-to-back? Like the Sixers, I'm still from that Denver stretch until they had this game canceled, they had two back-to-backs in four different cities. They played against six different teams in 8 days, in 9 days or something like that. The seedings are going to be all messed up. I think it's perfectly possible. I just checked the standings before we came on. As of yesterday, if the season ended, and it's only 20%, but the Sixers would be matched up at a three seed versus the Nets at the six seed. I think it's perfectly possible this year that the Sixers could be a better team than they were last year and lose in the first round. So when you say,
like you said, the standings are going to be all over the place.
They're going to be all over. Boston's going to have something to say. Indiana getting better with Caris LeVert. I was like, oh, Indiana's already a problem. And then getting Caris LeVert, you're like, oh my God, this is going to be a Caris LeVert just kills us. He's like Larry Fitzgerald.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Now he's out too. But man, the East is like the East has some quality. You got Milwaukee, you got Miami. They're way
Boston,
down in the standings.
Toronto, you got like the Nets. Like, yeah.
It's going to be like, so it's kind of like when teams say they have to be a serious contender. And I don't know if Hollis, if you're still out there, but I'll speak for Hollis. He always goes, oh, you guys got to prove you can get yourself out of the second round of the playoffs. And when people say that, it's like, that's true, but that means you're in the conference finals. So
right.
That means there's four teams left in the league. Like, you know, yeah, I want them to, obviously, I want them to win a championship. I want them to win a championship every year. I think what this shows is just how hard it really is to do. You got your stars. You found some pieces around here. They've got some expiring contracts for next year. You know, it's, and the East has gotten better with the Nets being real. Miami proved itself last year, whether they're as good or it was a little bubbles gold, fool's gold.
Well, speaking of bubble, do you think, who knows how many people will be vaccinated and if the players can get a vaccine by the time the playoffs roll around, but if not, they have to bubble for the playoffs, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, you know, the Sixers, they emailed us, they rolling our, they've got an interest-free loan from all of their season ticket holders for the last two seasons. They just told us that they're rolling our money. Basically, they rolled the money we paid in 2019-2020 into 2020-21, and then they started payments. Then they stopped them in like November, and then we just found out rolling it to next year. And if we can go to any games this year, we will be the first to be able to buy them. But so they're, you know, I would think so. And you know, this is, it's selfish because it's my entertainment, but it's kind of like you see all this news of you know, vaccines being wasted, and I don't want to be like they should not. I don't know how it, who's in charge and how it's supposed to work, but we shouldn't be wasting any.
No, just find an arm and stick it in them. Like,
right, anybody. And, yeah. And with the NBA, like, I don't know if it's bad optics. I don't know. They're there to make money. You know, get the, what's that Denver game that the Sixers had to play was just absolutely ridiculous. It's like, why don't, this is what I would rather they do, call it a forfeit, play a half so the young guys can get a break. Cause they had it was a back-to-back yeah. situation. So it's like, listen, people.
So you have eight guys for back-to-back. Like, that's terrible.
It's right. That's how people get hurt. You know, it's yeah. just, it's how yeah. they get hurt. I got friends that don't believe in this back-to-back nonsense. Although it's curious about the back-to-back, Matt. You know, it's Joel Embiid is soft and he can't play in back-to-backs, and these NBA players are pampered. But we're recording this on Tuesday night, January 19th. The Flyers played last night, and Carter Hart got sent off the ice in the second period after giving up four or five goals or whatever. And they're playing again tonight, and he's not playing. I don't know. He play, you know, I don't know. I don't know. Is playing back-to-back basketball games, running up and down a court over and over and jumping and hopping and sprinting and out to the three-point line and back. But goalie in hockey, that's some tough stuff. You know, you might have to move every 3 minutes or so. That's tough. You can't play back-to-back.
To be fair, one of my best friends in high school was a goalie, and he was drenched in sweat coming off of the ice after games. So, like, they move a lot more probably than you think they do, especially because they're always, like, kind of skating in place, like, forwards and backwards. I still, like, physically demanding in terms of, you know, bumps and bruises and stuff. Maybe basketball is more, but they're also taking a little rubber disc at, you know, 80, 90 miles per hour constantly. You're right. It does get looked at very differently. Like
right.
hockey, it's like, oh, it's okay for the goalie not to play back-to-back. Basketball, a 7-foot guy carrying 300 pounds up and down baseline to baseline for 40 minutes or 35 minutes. You know,
it's just it's part of my I don't know if you were aware of this, Matt Mullen of Philly Voice, but last year there was it's part of my shtick here with the Green Legion, where there was some list put together of Twitter people that are banned from talking about the Flyers, like this list. And I made it twice. Now, I wasn't the first. I think Mike Missinelli was number one, but my personal Twitter account at Philly Mike and at Green Legion, number two and three. Now, that takes some work there. I don't know who did that list. I'm sure it's someone I know personally, but and it was funny because all these other people, you know, some radio people, some media, like they were like, "What the hell is this? This is BS. I shouldn't be." And I stepped into it. I'm great. So you know, I
was on that list.
Well, then you're a nice guy. You see, that's you're too nice. You're too nice on Twitter.
That is part of my problem. Like, I despise the hot take kind of, like, you know, Kevin Kincaid of Crossing Broad will be doing one of his, like, "Hey, send me your hot takes. I'm going to do 50 Philly hot takes articles."
Right.
Like, dude, I don't have any. Like, my opinions kind of change with my mood sometimes, and like, I don't want to come out strong with one thing and then I'm tied to that. That's it. I can't make another judgment about it if my opinions change. And also, so many of the hot takes are negative, and like, I'm just not a big, you wouldn't know that, I guess, from some of the stuff I've been writing lately, but I don't like, you know, dumping on people for no reason. I guess that's part of the reason why I just ignore the trolls, because I feel like if I didn't, I would get mean and nasty, and then I might get myself in trouble.
Yeah, well, so basically for me, and you know, we're over an hour here, so I won't keep you much longer. But you know, I'm a Sixers guy, and you know, my family had tickets back at the run 20 years ago now. Geez, 20 years ago with Iverson during that time, and I love going to the games. And I just, the NBA is such a big thing, and you go to all these other cities, and the NBA is so much bigger than the NHL, except for here, at least it was, you know, 7-8 years ago. So I bought into the process early with Hinkie, and it wasn't really that I bought into the process. I was like, "Oh my God, we got someone with a plan. This is great. We got someone with a plan." So I was willing to wait to see if it would work or not. So obviously I'm happy with, you know, it hasn't been perfect or anything, but the one thing I always thought when the Sixers returned to, you know, proving themselves to be a contender was I was kind of imagining that we'd be treating them sort of like how the Flyers are treated in town, which is, you know, like, why can't Eagles, Phillies, and Sixers fans treat those teams like the Flyers fans treat the Flyers? They're so enthusiastic.
Yeah.
And loyal, like, everyone's loyal. They watch the games. Everyone watches all the Eagles games. But it's like, listen, Claude Giroux, you know, my partner, Sack, who is not here today, you know, Claude Giroux is a top five Flyer of all time. And I'm like, the dude, besides last year, since he was a captain, they hadn't gotten out of the first round of the playoffs. Like, I thought this is always about winning. Donovan McNabb was losing in NFC championship games, and he's a choke artist. Claude Giroux is a top five Flyer of all time. And I'm just like, well, this doesn't sound like us. And, you know, this doesn't sound like us. And, you know, like, for example, Carter Hart, which I am happy they got him. I don't know that much about hockey. The people I trust, this guy's got the goods. He's good. He's young. He's still got to prove himself. But, like, with him, he got chased off the ice the other night after giving up four goals in, you know, 30 minutes or something like that. Like, he looks awesome, but then he has these, you know, he gets shut out 5-0. They get five goals. So it's like, man, if that was Ben Simmons, you know, they were drafted the same year.
It'd be a topic for a week.
Oh my God, this guy stinks. He can't play back to backs. You know, he can't play on the road. And I don't want, I believe in Carter Hart and everything like that. It's not so, I don't say these things to put that guy down, but I say it to, like, hey, does this argument sound familiar to anyone out there? Because it seems like Eagles, Sixers, and the Phillies have been a mess lately too, but, like, it seems like we give some guys a big pass where, how about we just, like, Ben Simmons is an all NBA talent and a perennial all-star with offensive shortcomings, and he might just top out as an NBA all-star, perennial all-star. He's probably not the second option in the half court offense on a championship team. And that might just be what it is. And we won't accept it until he starts hitting 40% from three. It's
I think expectations obviously always have a lot to do with it. You know, when you're a number one overall pick, people are going to expect great things and, you know, they're going to give you a hard time. But you're right. There is a very different view of the team for Flyers fans than there are for Eagles, Phillies, Sixers.
I this is not Flyers fans. This is not to put you down. It's because I want that same energy and that same enthusiasm for all of our teams. You can still be disappointed when they lose, but, you know, let's cheer for them. If they're not doing so well, and try and bring them back. The Sixers are a team, though, that do need the fans in the stands, because it is, you get down there for games, it's electric. It's so much fun. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you can't, you're on press row or press corner or whatever it is over there. I don't know how you can't get
wrapped up in the atmosphere, especially when it's a tight game and Embiid hits a big shot down the stretch and starts shimmying down the court. Like, it's hard not to, like, I guess, like, I'll laugh and I'll smile and I'll be it, but, like, it's hard. You gotta like buckle down into your seat to not, you know, not show any emotion, which, you know, I've gotten pretty good at in 10 years. I was in the press box for the NFC Championship game and managed not to cheer. So,
man,
if I could handle that. I don't know if I can handle
one of the blessings of working with the Green Legion is it's a lot of work, like, on game day and setup, and especially on the road when
I've seen you getting ready for games.
I know
how much you do.
Yeah, we got to be down there early, and we got to be setting up and polite and smiling and make sure everyone's a good time. But the bonus is when we get to go to the games, you know, they're like, we're expected to be loud and rowdy and all that. So, well, anyway, hey, Matt, I really appreciate you taking time today with us. And where can people find your stuff if you want to plug some of your handles?
PhillyVoice.com, at Matt_Mullen on Twitter. Just Philly Voice, read all the guys, not just me, at Jimmy Kempsky, at Kyle Newbeck, at Evan_Macy. And Jay Santaliquido. Definitely read us all.
It's great stuff. Philly Voice, it's a must read whether you are Sixers, Eagles, Flyers, Phils. They're great stuff. And so We're going to close this out here. Tomorrow, Green Legion Radio will be back at 6 p.m. with Hollis Quimby / Super Sam. And welcome back, Sackmaster. So please subscribe, download the iHeartRadio app, download, rate, review the shows. It helps us out. We appreciate it. I appreciate you, Matt. Have a great night.
You too.